Hi, I'm Bonnie Burkert, and this is Truth Be Told, Transformation, bringing you tools for transformation to live your highest truth. So today we are going to talk to Heather Green. She is the author of a book called Lights, Camera, Witchcraft. Welcome, Heather.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
So, Heather, how do we find the truth? What is the truth that will be revealed in this book about the history of witchcraft in film and TV? I think it's a history of women in TV in some ways, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's one of the truths. There's lots of stories behind when you pull back the curtain, to use a analogy to a famous witch film. Mm-hmm. And when you pull back that curtain, there's a lot of stories underneath about what the witch actually represents in our society, in our culture. And one of those things is definitely women's power.
Right on. Well, can we just dive right into Wizard of Oz? I mean, you tell me back earlier, but you brought it up. You mentioned the curtain. And of course, I mean, Glinda the Good Witch has been a role model for as long as I can remember.
Yeah, she's wonderful. A lot of people think she's the first good witch that Hollywood had. That's actually not true. In fact, there was another Glinda before the famous one, before the one from 1930s. There was a Glinda in 1910 as well. So there's been a number of good witches, but she has been, she's such a beautiful figure and has lasted all these years. And it's, she's only beaten in her popularity and notoriety by her nemesis, the Wicked Witch of the West.
Oh, I know. Exactly. And I dressed like her for Halloween in one time in college and actually got the prize as the best makeup or something like that. I went green because it's been such a fascination. There's no question about it. So let's go back to the earliest days and in your research. So you've done, you're a student of both film as well as an understanding of the practice and history of witchcraft, occult, correct? So tell us a little bit about maybe how you came up with the idea of this book and then, you know, launch us into some of your process with finding all the information.
Well, I think it was when I started looking at the occult and started studying various aspects of it and witchcraft. When I was in college, I got interested in tarot cards, astrology, pretty standard stuff, a college student searching, and just loved it. And at the same time, I was in film school and I was studying film history and production, working in New York in production as well. And so the two paths were sort of going alongside each other, but hadn't mixed at all. And then at some point, I realized that there was this sort of trend of witch films. More and more, why were there so many witch films? The stuff I was seeing on the screen, I knew. And at the same time, I'm studying film, and my interest was always in how films reflect socio-political currents and how that changes over time. So I've done that type of study before, and so I wanted to apply that idea to the study of witchcraft, because I saw that the Wicked Witch of the West, who I adore as well, was not the same witch as I was seeing in The Craft or in Practical Magic or in these other 90s witch films that I was watching at the time. I said, this is, why is she different? What does the Hollywood engines, what do they see in a witch? How do they use her in narratives? I wanted to answer these questions, plus a lot of other ones as well. And so that's sort of where it was born. And it took me a few years later before I started it, when another witch wave started again, when another witch wave popularity. So I started the actual study in 2011, 12, 13, something like that. I don't remember. It takes a long time to do a book like this because you got to watch a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Or rewatch a lot of movies.
Yeah. Okay. Can we talk about the witch waves that you mentioned? So that's very interesting. And they may take us a little bit more current day. And I do want to go further back for sure. But let's go ahead. Since you brought that up, let's go ahead and mention that, because I'm just fascinated. I remember a couple of years ago going into an Urban Outfitters around the holiday season. And there were piles of books, you know, how they have the beautiful books on display as stocking stuffers. And there were so many books on witchcraft. It was crazy. And somehow, I guess I didn't realize I mean, dare I say mainstream? I mean, if it's in Urban Outfitters, it's feeling like it's sort of mainstream. So, I mean, is this a Harry Potter thing? Where's that coming from?
Well, it depends on what year it was. It could have been a Harry Potter thing, most certainly, but Harry Potter's a different type of witch movie. So,
Yeah.
talking about the waves, the first one began about 1968. The movie you can think about is Rosemary's Baby, and
Yeah.
there was a rash of films that went on from that period of time to the end of the 70s, with a few after that. And that this is not to say that there weren't witch films outside of these waves. It's just there was a huge number of them back to back. The popularity went up, and that corresponds to the popularity again of new age movements, new religious movements, astrology, tarot, witchcraft at the time in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
This next one began in the 80s, the late 80s, and then ended by the late 90s, about 10 years. And it was corresponded to the satanic panic, the fear of witchcraft. So this was a little bit of a different reason. And then, of course, the girl power movement of the craft and practical magic and charmed and all that stuff that happened in the late 90s. So there's a duality there. The third wave is more recent, which is probably what you were noticing. Started around 2011, 12. What I was noticing was actually helped launch the book. Think Salem, think Horror Story. Coven, American Horror Story, Coven, and a lot of the Once Upon a Time shows and all of that. These shows and the 75th anniversary of The Wizard of Oz as well happened at that time. So there was this launch of witch films just back to back starting around that time again, and we're at the tail end of it. And what's interesting, what you noted, is that sometime in this particular witch wave, witchcraft each time becomes more and more mainstream, dare I use that term, if that's even possible. And you started to see that Target had shirts that said basic witch. And there was stuff in the malls, and you said, yeah, like what store was it? You said Urban
It was
Outfitters
Urban
had it.
Outfitters, yeah.
Now that's, for modern day witches, and I speak generally, there's a love-hate relationship with
Yeah,
that.
sure.
It seems a little bit unmeaningful, and it takes something from it, but at the same time, it's becoming mainstream enough that the attacks and the problems are less. So there's a it's a, sort of a, it's got two sides to it, good and both bad.
I agree with you on that. It's I have mixed feelings because I feel like in a way a lot of the practice might be a quiet intention. I mean, there's a re again when you start seeing it in Target, the reverence is perhaps co somewhat compromised, but it doesn't have to be. I mean, at all. So and it's just interesting to look at it and again historically. So let's go back into. You know, we want, I want, we've mentioned a lot of film, and I want to bring up Bewitched as a TV show in the 60s, right? Was it 60s or 70s?
60s.
And again, Samantha was a good witch, and we didn't see her in black much, a little, right? So let's go in and go with some portrayals. Just even visually, you know, not even just the practice itself, but how, what they look like. So, what did you make of that? I mean, she was a sexy witch.
She was a very interesting character. That was a brilliant show, really. It kind of walked the line on a lot of levels. She was what I'd call a fantasy witch. So she did not have to tell, she didn't learn her magic from outside. Okay. She was just a witch, just naturally a witch. And she was sort of the witch version of June Cleaver, the 1950s perfect wife, or at least that's what she was trying to be. The producer said that Samantha was trying to kick her witchdom habit. That was the comedy in it. She was constantly trying to be the perfect wife, but she could not be. She was constantly using magic. She kept flipping back and having to use magic and resorting to magic to clean up her husband's messes, to clean up the house, to do her chores, to deal with her mother. So there was this undercurrent of this undercurrent of feminism, within this narrative, within this character that you're talking about. She was this perfect, trying to be this perfect housewife, but she could not relinquish her authentic self, her authentic feminine power, which is allegorically witchcraft, right? So she tried and tried and tried, and yet was unable to do so. So you wind up with this allegory for women's power right at the time when the second wave feminism was really starting to take hold of the nation.
Right on.
And she was that person. She's like, I'm trying to be the 1950s June Cleaver perfect housewife, but I can't give up my personal power. And so she's trying, but she's not able to. And so the show is demonstrating how a woman is struggling with this point at a pivotal moment in American history.
Wow, that is awesome. Well put. I mean, very, very, very interesting, and really cool timing as well, as far as the women's rights movement. So, right. I mean, so let's think about, so when you mentioned the 60s, you talked about Rosemary's Baby, and I haven't seen that in a really long time, but it was a little bit satanic, right? Was it, or a lot satanic?
A lot satanic. Yes. What's interesting, and you're talking about looks when you're talking about the look of Samantha, and getting to satanic witchcraft, which begins to really hit popularity film cycles in the 70s. Samantha is a fantasy witch. Fantasy witches don't tend to look good ones anyway. Don't tend to use that black motif. That's usually reserved either for fantasy witches that are evil, Wicked Witch of the West. Think of Glinda, she's in pink. They're usually lightly colored, or witch next doors are usually, they're usually dressed like us. So there's not really that dark feeling about their costuming or their presentation. Now, when you get to Rosemary's Baby, and after that, you start to see a big difference in the coloring and the look of witches at that point. They change. Because you add that satanic ritual ceremonial element to it, which changes, it's a totally different representation of witchcraft. It's no longer fantasy, it's horror. So it
True.
changes the way witches look. And Rosemary's Baby, yes, is it heralds in a ton of witchcraft films that are centered around satanic coven practice and cults.
Right. And I mean, we saw a rash of that through the 70s. Some of those earliest horror movies that I was allowed to go to, I was young and somehow talked mom and dad into letting me go see R-rated movies. But I mean, The Omen and certainly The Exorcist, and I mean, those are in a similar motif, but without actually being, that's taking it down a creepier path, and I feel that we don't need to do that. I mean, you and I gave you we gave immediate references to good witches and a different way, and how it's being used now. I mean, I think it's much more earthy and a white witch, right? The white witches that are out there.
There is right now it's a blend, and so culture doesn't really get rid of things, it just builds on itself. So it just keeps diversifying the way witches are presented. So we have all kinds of witches right now. We have all kinds of presentations. You get the satanic stuff going on, and but it gets turned on its head. Think the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Here you have a good witch who willingly has a religion that is based on that worships Satan, and it's not thought of as anything weird. It's just what the religion is. So it's a totally different exploration of the same topic that's been centered, that witches have been centered on for all of this time. The 70s was a totally different story, but that was a rebirth of horror in a new way that affected, you had just the satanic element that never before was able to really be on film until that point. So it was like all over the place, right? I like to say all hell broke loose in the 70s.
Love it. No, it was really creepy. So what happened that suddenly became, I mean, let's like take it back to the political climate. I mean, because we were just I mean, I was just a recent interview spoke about how the awakening of a consciousness in the 60s blossomed the yoga movement, right? So, okay, let's talk about what was going on in the 60s, rock and roll,
Oh yeah, rock and
drugs.
roll. Well, it changed everything.
Where did that come
society was
from?
breaking down and things were being challenged. People were, they wanted something new, and Hollywood was losing ticket sales. They were losing money. Let's just go down to the money level for Hollywood. Slowly over the 60s, Hollywood couldn't really find its audience. Newer generations that were buying tickets were not interested in the age-old stories that were being told in the 40s and the 50s. And there was, various cultural movements going on. Civil rights movement, the feminism, the environmental movement happened at this time. I mean, like you're talking about, new consciousness was being born, new age movements, new religions. So you have all this going on, and Hollywood's losing its audience. And what it did in 1968 was get rid of the Production Code Administration. And what that was a censorship system. And I talk about this in my book, a censorship system that disallowed a lot of subject matter. And disallowed a lot of ways women, religion, and other things were treated. So Hollywood said, "We're going to get rid of this self-censorship system," which was established in the 1930s. Could you imagine, like, the values and difference between 1930, when it was written, and 1965, 1968 are vast. So they said, this value system, this is not working for us anymore. So in 1968, right after Rosemary's Baby, the censorship system was disbanded, and they put in the rating system. That's what we have today. We have R, PG. So instead of this one agency telling us what we can and can't see on screen and what can and can't be put on screen, filmmakers and producers could produce whatever they wanted. Then it got slapped with a rating. It's either R, G, PG, and eventually PG-13 came in the 80s. So you also had so by this point, all of these fabulous filmmakers, foreign directors, whatever, could do whatever they want. They could put on screen whatever it was they want. And all these years of not being able to put a satanic type horror, a lot of other stuff. It was exploitation all over the map in representations of different subject matter. So when you get released, the floodgates open. So for witch films, we wind up, like I said, all hell broke loose. We wind up with a ton of witchcraft horror. And it's really the first time the witch takes the center place, takes center stage in horror. Before that, there was very few horror films with witches in it.
Isn't that
That's the
interesting?
story.
No, that's really, really, really interesting to look at it. Okay, so we're in the 60s. We've mentioned Bewitched. Now, was Bewitched kind of ahead of that, then the wave? I mean, are they separate, or do you think it kind of informed people's interest in magic? Because we had I Dream a Genie as well, not a witch, but magical. So
It is before. She comes before, and she's on TV, and there is a code on television, but she is sort of a precursor, and she's exploring the subject matter, the conversations being have in culture. She and that show is exploring that on television in comedy, which is a very different thing. Now, television had its own code and had its own programming. Television was in the home, so they were a little bit more conservative, and a lot of stuff had to be hidden more deftly than could be done on film, where there weren't children necessarily in a theater. So TV presented differently. And the producers of Bewitched actually said that sometimes you can do more with comedy. You can make more statements about society and culture in comedy than you can do in other genres. You can hide them better because people always want to laugh. And so they really hit the nail on the head. If you think about it, you had two different cultures coming together. You had a marriage of two totally different cultures as well. That's another allegory, and that was prominent in this period. You're talking about interfaith, interrace, interethnic, whatever it is, having to come together in a marriage and deal with that, and deal with the other family members coming in and stuff. So you're and her, the witch, this woman is the center point of the home, which, is very typical. So you have a lot going on in Bewitched that was really ahead of its time, but very poignant for its time.
Fabulous. Okay, interesting. So tell me some of your other, tell me some of the other films or shows, TV shows that you thought have been really sort of on that level as far as a breakthrough and a statement, what they're, you know, how they're perhaps furthering people's awareness and interest and defusing the fear around witchcraft.
Well, I think that the markers along the way, I would look at Bell Book and Candle is an interesting one because it also just it's precursor to Bewitched,
Okay.
but
When was
it's
that?
that
Remind
was
me.
1957.
Okay, wow, that's long ago.
Yes, and so that one also has an interesting allegory in there that's hidden within it. The author, the author of the original play was gay, and so what he did is he baked into this play that he wrote about witches in New York an allegory for that scene, the scene he was involved in, which was very hidden. And so if you know that about what he's doing and about his life and his experiences, and you know that's baked into the story, you can the movie has two levels. It has a story about the woman, of course, and negotiating her power. She actually has to give up her power to be married, unlike Samantha, right? So, and then you have the story of the gay community in New York in the 1950s being hidden. So you have lots of stuff going on there too. It's similar to Bewitched. Bewitched was not based on that play, though. Bewitched had its own thing. It was inspired by it. Another one that's definitely remarkable, Rosemary's Baby, which I already said, be just because it sort of heralds in the beginning of witchcraft horror and is a brilliant film. It's just flat out a brilliant film. Another great film to look at in terms of what you're talking about is The Craft, 1996. It is the first prominent film that really gives you a positive look at modern witchcraft as it's practiced. It does go a little satanic, panic, crazy horror at the end, but the
That was the
beginning of it,
three. That was the three gals in the in high school, right?
four, there's four of
Sorry,
them.
four. Yeah.
No, that's okay. And if you haven't seen it in a while, I definitely watch it. And it is, it's a teen horror film, but it gives you this beautiful scene where they're in the woods practicing a natural magic. Really connecting to each other, to connecting to nature. And that there actually was a Wiccan priestess on the set that advised.
Fabulous.
Yes. And so after that, there's a number of films like that that do that. One film that nobody knows about. Can I tell you this film? Nobody knows about this film. It's a little teenage film. It's called The Last Keepers.
Okay.
It's not going to win Academy Awards. It's not that type of film. It's just one of those feel-good films. And it gets as close to the feeling and energy of witchcraft in the modern world as many films do. Without the Satanism, it's natural. They go into they're artists. They live an eclectic lifestyle. It's just a nice little film about being a witch and living in a witchcraft, living in their witchcraft, living their witchcraft truth in a modern world.
And when and how recent is that?
2000, I want to say 2015. I'm
Okay.
guessing. I can't remember exactly. It's recent.
All right. So I mentioned, do you have before I ask this question, anything else that you want to bring up? Key
With
films,
the
marker, I use
other markers.
a good word marker, because if not, I'm going to if you don't mind, I'm going to jump in. I got to know about Harry Potter. How do you feel that that factors in?
That's a great question. And I get that a lot. Now, Harry Potter is a British film.
True.
Yeah, there was American filmmakers on it. So I don't study it in depth.
Okay.
I don't give it the time that most people expect in a witchcraft book. How it fits in, though, I do talk about it because obviously it's a powerhouse, a cultural powerhouse. How it fits in is very different. Harry Potter is a an epic. Is an epic fantasy. It's more like a Lord of the Rings than
Yeah.
it is like a traditional witchcraft film. It's
Okay.
about a young boy's quest, more than it is about a witch's trying to overcome her problems, trying to deal with her power. It's about a young boy's quest to find himself, to overcome what I like to call a false father. That would be Voldemort. to figure out his family and to achieve. And you know, it's a standard story, a standard mythological tale that we've seen over and over again. It's very much more like, as I said, a Lord of the Rings
Lord of
type
the Rings.
story.
Yeah, interesting.
So it just has, it's just been baked up with a lot of with a witchcraft fun. Kind of that's just sort of the way it's been
Good
presented,
way to
but
put
it's
it.
that story. Very different than witchcraft stories. Very, very different.
It is. They're more
But it did make
wizard.
witchcraft popularity. Yes?
They're kind of wizardy. They're almost like, right? It feels a little more like wizards than witches.
Yeah, it's very different. It has a totally it's very fantastical. It's fun. But it isn't a traditional witchcraft film. And because it's British, I did not talk about it. But what it did was, and during that period of time, just to say, there's a lot of fantasy, there was a lot of epic fantasy going on. It was very popular. It was, you had Lord of the Rings at that time, you had what's the other one? Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe at that time. Most of these are British films.
Right.
So there's a lot of that going on at the time. So that, and that seems to happen in between witch waves. I don't know why we get into this stuff, but it did launch a number of other similar type of witch films here in the US or shows that centered around witch worlds, you know, magical worlds. You had
Right.
Twitches, you had the wa witches of w Wizards of Waverly Place, and a number of other films. There was a movie called The Covenant. It's actually a horror, teen horror film, but it has male witches, which is very strange, very different. So Harry Potter created, launched other types of narratives and films outside of itself here in the US, certainly.
Yes. Okay, so you brought up male witches, and I think that not many people realize that, I mean, men are witches. It's not warlock is not the right term, right? I mean, that's a warlocks are something different. Witches, so had we seen most of those? Have we seen many of those along the way in your studies, or were witches always women in what you've mostly unearthed in your research?
That's a good question. Most witches are women. However, there are periodically male witches. You have a very few before 1960. Then from 1960 to about 1980, you get a ton of them, and they're mostly ceremonial magician types.
Okay.
They're pr practicing ceremonial magic for the most part, with few exceptions. The Jack Lemmon in Bell Book and Candle, it plays one of the best male witches, and he's called a witch.
Wow.
It's a fantastic role. He does a beautiful job. But then you stop seeing them for the most part until more recently, in the last 10, 15 years. And they appear again, and now they're witches. Now the term warlock, Hollywood likes the term warlock. Modern witchcraft, there are people that use it legitimately, and it means witch. They just choose to use that title. Some people use the title wizard. I mean, you don't, I don't argue with them. That's what they want to use. But generally speaking, most male witches do not use the term warlock. Generally speaking, of course, that's modern witchcraft. But in movies, love to use the word warlock and wizard. They sound fun and fantastical, and generally speaking, though, again, warlock, when Hollywood uses it, is a negative term.
Yeah.
And for and there is actually is a movie from 19, I think it's 1987 or 8, called Warlock, about an evil male witch. But we've seen a lot of male witches lately, more, and they actually are called witches, not wizards, not warlocks. And they're doing exactly the same thing as female witches. But most witches in Hollywood are women.
Let's take it way back again, to you mentioned an earlier Glinda.
Yes. So most people think that The Wizard of Oz is the very first adaptation of Baum's famous book, which was published, I believe, in 1900 or 1901. That's not true. The first adaptation was in 1910 when he was alive. He had sold the rights over to, and I forget the production company right now. I think it was Selig, and I have it in my book, and because he needed money. So he sold the rights for the film rights over to this production production company, and they produced The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, a silent. You can actually see it on YouTube.
Incredible.
It's 10 minutes maybe. It's a short silent, pretty standard for the time. And there's a little Glinda in it, and I say little because I watched it on YouTube. So she was really little, and she floats down in a little costume,
Incredible.
white, I believe. And it's really interesting to see how that done. Now, it was popular and it did really well. And then Baum decided that he was going to try it himself. He started the Oz Film Manufacturing Company and produced, I think, three or four more that did moderately well based on his books. I think he died shortly after that. And then there were several other adaptations. I think there was one or two in the 20s. I can't remember exactly, but there was at least two more before The Wizard of Oz, before the famous MGM movie. And the what's interesting, and you're talking about uncovering facts and stuff, is that the Wizard of Oz was largely considered box office poison by the movie industry. They did not want to have anything to do with it. Every time someone produced one, it really didn't do all that well. And so again, it was considered box office poison. So MGM taking it on was like, oh, is this going to even work?
Wow.
They were brave. They were trying to compete with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, is what they were trying to do. Everybody
Yeah.
wanted to compete with Disney at that point and
I
see if they
wanted
could
to
come up
ask
with it.
about that. And what a gorgeous film. I mean, one of
Oh my
the
gosh.
earliest ones, right? But talking about a frightening witch in that one, too. I wanted to ask you in your book, again, titled Lights, Camera, Witchcraft, The History of Witchcraft in America, American TV and Film, right? I think I got it mostly correct.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask how cartoons factor in, and definitely Snow White had come to mind as a feature. So, yeah, tell me how that works in your studies.
Well, it's cartoons is a another story in it that I don't really ever get asked about because everyone forgets about cartoons, which is how they started. It was kind of like a sideshow, like, it's just something that you see with the movie because that's the way it used to be. And so actually it was in cartoons that Hollywood started to capture the unique archetype of the Halloween witch. And that happens in the 20. You see her repeated over and over again. And that figure, black cloak, black hat, typically a cat and a pumpkin and all that stuff that's we typically associate with the Halloween icon
Broom.
started, yeah, and it really started in animation. It started in the 1920s, black and white animation, and she really never changes. Before The Wizard of Oz, she doesn't have a green face. After The Wizard of Oz, she has a green face. And you think my favorite version of her is actually Witch Hazel from the Bugs Bunny cartoons. I just adore her. She's like a mockery of the Wicked Witch of the West. I just adore her.
I
Um,
forgot
but
about
but if you
her.
look at them today, they look almost identical as they did in the 20s. And that's cartoons influence. Those are cartoons. Now, animation had more influence because you had Disney. And Disney has done a number of the most prominent and notable witches that we have in Hollywood. You have the Wicked Queen. You have her alter ego, the witch, the crone. You have Ursula from Little Mermaid. You have Maleficent.
Maleficent, yeah.
I mean, really, and there's others too. You have in Brave, there's the little witch in the woods in Brave. She's a great little crone character. Mama Odie and Princess and the Frog. I'm rattling them off. I'm a Disney fan, so.
Right on. No, I love that. I love that. It's really, really cool to look at. And you're helping me weave this all together. And I love looking at the history of film as a statement of what's happening in society. So help me. So we talked a little bit about Wizard of Oz, which was 30. So you took us a little bit on the 20s, through the 20s, and what was happening. I think I love the fact that animation was really informing a certain vibe around witches. And then so that's 30s. 40s was then Wizard of Oz, right?
End of the, it was 39, Wizard of
39.
Oz.
So
So
that took us
entering into the 40s,
into the
yes.
40s. And then what was going on, like 40s into 50s? So that was, post-war. What was happening with the witch at that point? I mean, Halloween
No.
maybe getting bigger and bigger.
The witch through the 30s, 40s, and 50s was really she wasn't popular in and of herself. She was used, and that's really far back. She's used as a character for a story. The story is what's important, and she happens to have a witch in it. So if it's a comedy, oh ha ha, she's magic, but it's fantasy, right? Or oh, we're gonna do a remake of Joan of Arc. Here you go. Here's another witch. Or in the case of we had a Macbeth remade then. Or we're gonna retell a story that happens to have a witch in it. So the witch is not really popular in and of itself. Magic is not popular. Most people in America in the early to mid 20th century did not think witches and witchcraft was real. Even when spiritualism was really popular in the turn of the century, they still did not see that as witchcraft. It was not real. It was fake. It was fantasy. So a lot of the cases in the golden era of Hollywood, that mid-range you're talking about, witches were not center points. Usually it is simply a story where a woman thinks she's a witch, and it proves that she's not. She's just crazy. You have this the woman who came back, or you have this poor woman who's brought over from the South Seas, where she's learned witchcraft there, or she's had a religion that was a South Seas religion. They call it witchcraft, and now she's got to be removed from it and taught how to be an American. That's so witchcraft is sort of wrapped into these other stories. It's not witchcraft itself.
Fabulous. Okay, this is really great. And I know there are hundreds of examples that you give in your book. So tell me where do you feel it's going? What do you imagine this next decade has in store, decade or two? What do you think?
I get asked that all the time, and I always like to say, well, let me pull out my crystal ball and my tarot cards.
All right, I set you up and you spiked it over the net. Perfect. Perfect, Heather. Thank you.
I really don't know. And that's the interesting part about the representation of witches. Even when we talk about them becoming mainstream, they're not really. The idea of practicing witchcraft, of being a witch, is really centered around the idea of being in this liminal space, in this other place where you're pushing boundaries, where you're playing with things that we can't see, transformational energies and deities and whatever it is the witch is doing, the magic and the spells and so where the witch goes, and I say this at the end of the book, really depends on where our culture goes. How she looks depends on what is not accepted and what boundaries we need to push. She's a rebel, so she can't be at the center. So even if we accept her, she's going to move further out. She's going to still be the rebel regardless, still pushing boundaries, still being in that liminal space, challenging us, challenging our beliefs. So where she goes, it's going to be interesting. I believe right now we're at the end of the witch phase, and we're going to start moving into probably, my guess is we're going to start moving into paranormal, which is usually what happens. Popularity of paranormal stuff. We'll move into eventually, it'll be other monsters. We'll get back to vampires and zombies and who knows what else. Eventually the witchcraft will come back to Hollywood in force. When that is, 10, 15, 20 years, who knows?
It seems to have its cycles, doesn't it? Well,
It is.
I appreciate you teeing us up to talk about paranormal, and hey, I'm bringing in otherworldly as well and aliens, because our main show, Truth Be Told, it specializes in that. So I love that you're talking about that, and I agree. But I, you know, it's interesting. I'm sitting here having like envisioning scripts about the more earthy, different type of witchcraft, and from different places. And so, did you ever see the movie that's a fairly recent release, probably 5 years or so, Midsommar? Midsummer? Yeah. So that was like a creepy Scandinavian witchcraft. So there's pagan, right? So I think it's going to be interesting to see in terms of how long this wave is going to last. So.
And they are expressing, and that's a really good point. one of the this witch wave has expressed witchcraft more globally and more with more diversity on who the witch is. Like we talked about, there's more male witches now, for example. There was a trans woman who is a witch. You see witchcraft in different parts. It's not always the ceremonial, it's not always the black hat and black cloak.
I
You
agree.
know, we're seeing more, or the satanic even. So we've seen a lot of changes in diversity already. So we may see, like you said, Midsummer and other representations. And the funny thing you said about paranormal, which we really didn't talk about, is getting back to the 50s and 60s, it was the paranormal, it was the popularity of paranormal shows that helped move witches into horror by the 1960s.
Twilight
They
Zone.
were doing it first. Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, the thrillers,
Interesting.
Alcoa Presents, all of those super popular shows are what helped really singularly move the witch from her place as just fantasy into a reality, into a potential reality. So we have to have a hat tip to the paranormal shows of a bygone era.
They keep feeding each other. It's beautiful. Now, I
Oh,
love
yeah.
it. Thank you, Heather. This is beautiful. I'm fascinated. I cannot wait to read your book, Lights, Camera, Witchcraft. And we can find out through your website. It's on llewellyn.com, I think is the website there. Lots of different places to find it. And thank you so much. You've shared a lot with us, and I know there's just so much more to yet to be read. So I appreciate it. Until the
Thank
next
you very much for
time.
having me.
Cheers, everybody. I'm Bonnie Burkert, and this has been a really fun conversation for Truth Be Told Transformation. I have a new episode every Wednesday. Fridays, we are live at 3 p.m. Pacific with Tony Sweet, our fearless leader. Nothing normal about him, only paranormal over there. And on Mondays, Robert Hemsley with the Minuteman Report, also live at 3 Pacific. So please join us. Please share. Thanks for checking us all out and stay tuned until the next time. Namaste.